The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
The Timeless Podcast Company present this podcast. In immersive sound design.
Want to welcome everybody to the Breaking Anonymity podcast. This podcast is about breaking a lot of the stigmas and a lot of the social misinformation about recovery and recovery programs. This podcast is not about a specific recovery program, whether you are in narcotics, alcoholic, gambling, sex addiction. This podcast is about helping you understand how a recovery program can benefit you and help you. I am MC Search, and my partner in rhyme and in crime here is Kyle Eustace.
And I don't know about any rhymes yet, but hey, we could work on that together.
No problem. Between she and I, we have a couple of decades in recovery, and we love to bring on people to share their story of recovery. And we have a really, really special guest. Q Burrow Queensbridge is in the building. Kyle, take it away.
Oh, wow. Yes. This was absolutely unexpected and such a wonderful surprise to learn that we have Havoc of the infamous Mobb Deep, who is a bona fide hip hop legend. And aside from producing most of Mobb Deep's catalog, he's crafted music for artists such as the late Notorious B.I.G., Eminem, Nas, 50 Cent, and LL Cool J, just to name a few. He also has an incredible story of recovery. And I'd just like to welcome you to this podcast, Havoc.
Thank you. Thank you. What's up, y'all?
What up?
What up?
Well, feel free. You can share your story, brother. The stage is yours.
Okay.
We'll pass the mic to you.
Okay, well, you know, my name is Havoc, you know, from, you know, Mobb Deep, Queens, New York. I'm what you could call a recovering alcoholic, you know what I mean? Pretty much was like a lifelong battle of mine. It started off innocent. You know what I mean? Growing up in the hood and, you know, what teenagers do, you hanging out, you know, you're drinking beer, you might get some liquor, and, you know, it's pretty normal, you know what I'm saying? Everybody drinks, you know what I'm saying? That's what, you know, it's a grown-up thing, right? But sometimes people know when the party stops, and some people don't know when the party stops, you know what I mean? And for me, the party just kept going. When the party was over, I found myself still, you know what I'm saying, drinking or what have you. And it didn't help much that, you know, my brother passed away early when my career took off. So, you know, to try to deal with that, you know, I definitely was self-medicating, you know what I'm saying, drinking a lot. And then, you know, when you're an alcoholic, you try to use everything for a crutch anyway, right? You know what I mean? So that kind of became my crutch over the years. Being antisocial became my crutch, you know what I mean? Being in the industry, you know, not really knowing how to socialize with industry heads. So, you know, taking a drink, to take the edge off, you know what I mean? So constantly taking the edge off, being in the industry, stuff like that. You know, it just got to the point where, you know, drinking was like a normal thing for me. Because I didn't see it as something that was bad, like, you know what I mean? Until I started like embarrassing myself in public, like, you know what I mean? Just going out to different places and, you know, drinking to the point where, you know, everybody is like chilling and sipping and I'm just gulping down cups, you know what I mean? So, you know, you get to a point where you're drunk, you're stumbling, you're doing things out of character, you know what I mean? And you do enough of that, and you're like, okay, I don't want to do that no more. So now you're in the house doing it. Like, you think you're safe because you're in the house doing it. You're not around a lot of people. And actually, that's kind of worse, right? Because now the guardrails are off. There's nobody there to be like, yo, chill, slow down. So you think that you're doing it in the comfort of your own home. So that's me. I'm doing it in the comfort of my own home. You know, business is still coming across my desk. I'm not making it to certain places. Now I'm unreliable. So now that's just hindering your well-being. You know what I mean? And you're not taking care of what you have to do. But I, you know what I'm saying? I kind of, you know, I peg myself as a smart individual. So I, you know, I could feel when I'm going down the wrong path or whatever. And, you know, I'm kind of stubborn. Like, I don't like nobody to tell me, like, yo, chill, slow down. And, you know, to me, it is kind of true that, you know, sometimes people have to hit rock bottom in order to stop. Like, a million people could tell you to chill out and, like, you know, stop drinking or whatever, whatever. But it's really you that got to come to some inflection point and just be like, nah, like, you know, let me, if you really care about yourself and care about the things that you do, you're going to pump the brakes, you know what I'm saying? Eventually, before, you know, you wrecking your liver, you wrecking your life, you just, it's just a whole bunch of things that you're wrecking. So I had good people in my life, like my family and stuff like that. They did an intervention one time, you know, at my house. They came to my house early in the morning. I'm crazy drunk. And just to make a long story short, they put me in rehab, you know what I'm saying, far away from here in Florida. And that was like one of the best things that happened to me. This is years ago. This is like over 10 years ago, like 15, 20 years ago, something like that. And that was like one of the best things that happened to me. And then when I went to that rehab, that was the first time I ever went to an NA meeting. You know what I mean? I was crazy, embarrassed to be there. I didn't know how to deal with it because I'm already antisocial anyway. You know what I'm saying? So when I'm there, and then you have to be like, hey, my name is Kimo Batita. I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, you know, and you see everybody else, you know, doing it. It just was crazy to me. But the more I was there, the more comfortable I got. And I started realizing that this was helping me. And, you know, I did the whole 30 days. And then I continued to go on and be, you know, sober for about 5 years, you know what I'm saying, before I had my first relapse. But I was better prepared for the next time that I would eventually stop, you know what I mean, because I already had some of the tools that I needed. So when we talk about these NA meetings or, you know, any other kind of program that helps people with sobriety, I think they're important. You know what I mean? Because sometimes we feel like we could do it ourselves, but it's always nice to be able to talk to somebody that's going through the same thing that you're going through, you know? And my battle with alcohol is not over, you know what I mean? It's like, it's a day-to-day thing, day-by-day. And right now, I'm 4 months sober, you know what I mean? So I feel good, you know, even though I can't say it's 10 years or nothing like that, but, you know, 4 months, I'm proud of myself, you know what I mean? So that's pretty much like my story in a nutshell, unless if y'all got, you know, some questions for me, you know what I mean?
Amazing. Amazing.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Congratulations, first of all, congratulations on 4 months. I do want to ask you something, and it's something that I heard in meetings, because unlike you, relapse isn't a part of my story. But I always heard that when you know about recovery and you discover recovery, that recovery ruins a relapse. Mm-hmm. Because you know you shouldn't do it, mm-hmm. and you know why you shouldn't be putting that chemical in your body,
right?
But you do it anyway,
right?
Have you identified that for yourself? Like, have you gotten to the point where you realize I've learned enough about recovery that you know, this will be my last relapse, or if I relapse again, I understand the whys behind the relapse?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? I understand. I can't speak for anybody else, but I would understand if I had a relapse. Why? That's why I think I could stay away from the relapse longer. You know what I mean? But like I said, you know, I just take every day as a win. And relapses, they feel horrible. You know what I mean? Because it's like you threw away those sober days and you just got to start back over again. You know what I mean? But relapses don't feel good. They're horrible. You know what I mean? Because it's like you let yourself down. You didn't have that willpower to just say, nah, I'm good, you know? And that's where sometimes sponsors come in, like people that you could call and be like, yo, man, I feel like taking a drink, and you know, or whatever it is, if you know, if it's any other kind of addiction.
Can I ask you what led you to this last relapse? Do you mind sharing it with us?
You know what? What led me to this? Overconfidence. You know what I'm saying? Being so confident that, yo, I got 5 years and I'm good. That means that I could take a drink now and I'm all right. I just stopped for 5 years. You know what I mean? But that's not the case, because sometimes you find yourself trying to catch up or trying to make up for lost times. And then now you're just worse than ever. It's like, you know, but the last time that I did relapse, it was just overconfidence. Like, oh, what? I stopped for 5 years. I could take a couple of drinks and I'm good. But, you know, that's not the case. That's not the case for me, you know.
That's where it gets you. And that's why I think we're seeing so many opioid deaths, is because people get sober from that and then, or clean, I should say. And then they go back out and thinking they can start over like where they left off. And the next thing you know, they're overdosing, you know, and it's tragedy. It really is. You mentioned at the beginning that your brother's passing was kind of like a catalyst. You know, what did you learn through that? Did you learn that drinking numbed your pain? Is that kind of why you decided to turn to it? And did that change over the years? Did all of a sudden drinking kind of go like, ugh?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Drinking, I thought it was going to, you know, kind of numb the pain, but it actually made the pain worse. Like, you know what I'm saying? It exacerbated the problem. Like, if I was feeling down, alcohol just made me feel even more down. Like the world was on my shoulders. And it didn't numb it. It actually made me feel it more, like it, or maybe worse than I was even feeling.
Interesting. Yeah, I could see how that could happen too. You know, I'll share this with you, and Search already knows this, but you know, I lost my mom suddenly 2 years ago, just completely out of the blue. And I was in recovery. I still, obviously, at the time, and I kept going to meetings and I was sharing about it and I was crying about it. And I was really just telling my truth, you know, what just happened. And several women came up to me afterwards and they're like, we cannot believe you didn't relapse through this. Like, we can't believe it. And it was right then where I was like, whoa, like this is really something to mm-hmm. be proud of, you know? Mm-hmm. And it gave me new strength in a sense to move forward. But I definitely understand, you know, I don't think that if I would have started drinking that it would have helped, you know? Right. I think it would have made everything worse.
Absolutely.
Yes. So do you think there's something you're going to do differently this time around?
You know, definitely I have to do something different this time around so I don't head towards, you know, get the same result in the relapse. Bearing that confidence, you know what I mean? That overconfidence, like, yeah, I got this. Like, you know, 5 years from now, like, you know, F it. Let me just take a drink. Like, nah, you know what I mean? And this time around in my head, I really got in my head that drinking is corny. You know what I'm saying? It's like mad corny. It kind of is,
to be honest. It's weird because now that I'm, you know, sober, you notice that it's literally everybody's crutch. It's like you'll go out and they're like, oh, do you want to go get a drink? You're like, no. And like, oh, hey, we have a business meeting. Let's go get some cocktails.
Right.
No. Right. Yeah, you do start to notice. That's funny. So just keep that in your mind, okay? It's corny, Havoc.
Yeah,
you don't want to be corny.
Right. Okay?
You freaking Mobb Deep, all right? Like, no corny allowed.
Right. You know what I mean? None whatsoever, man. It's too corny.
I wanted to go back to something too, because you talked about your intervention that you had. I think you said it was like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Did you think that was corny? Did you think your family stepping to you and saying you got a problem? And even though you went to rehab and you did the 30 days and all of that, was there a part of you that even still, even though you recognized you had a problem, there was still that little party back in your head? It was like, yeah, yeah, I'm gonna do this, whatever. But yo, this shit is corny.
Yeah, I was real resentful. Like, yo, y'all all coming to my house and, you know what I mean? You're trying to get, like, I'm good. Don't worry about it. I'm all right. You know what I'm saying? Let me drink some water today, all day today. I'm fine. Like, the problem will go away. But I did think of it as corny at the time. But, you know, I wasn't in my right state of mind.
And, yeah, go ahead, Kyle.
I was going to say, too, like, you know, now that we're getting older and stuff, I feel like it's more important than ever to take care of our health. And, you know, seeing my mom pass away, like, really sparked something in me. It's like, all right, I hired a health coach. I hired a personal trainer. I hired a grief counselor, you know, taking eating and exercising really seriously. Did you find as you got older as well that that's something that's kind of been top of mind?
Oh, yeah, man. Of course, you know, I try to stay health conscious as much as I can, you know, and I just think about being here for a long time. Like, I want to be here for a while, you know, as long as God permits, you know, and I don't want to shorten that by anything that I'm putting inside of my body, you know, if I can help it. That's one thing that we can control, what we put inside our body. So,
yeah,
like, you know, I'm conscious of that.
Well, when you think about it, too, like alcohol is literally poisoning your blood. You're literally putting poison into your bloodstream. And it's interesting, you know, I hope my dad doesn't mind this, but since my mom passed away, he quit drinking as well, because it just it made him depressed. It made him sad. It didn't help anything, like you said.
It don't.
You know, you were talking about the obviously the tragedy of your brother dying. I think we'd be remiss not to talk about Prodigy and his death as well.
Yeah.
Were you sober or are you in recovery at the time when P died?
I was like back and forth with it. You know, I was pretty much back and forth with it. You know, still battling it, you know, things. I wasn't at his funeral drunk. I was sober. I had to drive there. But yeah, you know, during that time, I knew that I did have to mostly stay sober to handle something of that magnitude, you know. And even today, you know, when I think about it, it's still a driving force just thinking about it.
Yeah. You guys were in Vegas at the time at a show, yeah?
Yeah, we was.
And he was rushed to the hospital right after, and unfortunately he died at the hospital.
Yeah.
Was the pain so intense that you felt like relapsing right after you heard?
I couldn't believe it. You know, I just couldn't believe it. And yeah, the pain was super immense, you know. But for some reason, it didn't really drive me to drink, because I knew that I needed to be sober for this period right here, you know, because it was going to be a lot of things going on that I had to be strong for the people around me, you know, and the people that, you know, that I care about. So I couldn't really indulge like that. And, you know, I wasn't fully sober, but, you know, I was functioning.
That was a tough story to write. I remember I was tasked with writing that story when he passed away. And the outpouring of love, first of all, was really special to see. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like this was something that could have been prevented. As I understand, it was really hot that day in Las Vegas when you're performing.
Yeah. It was like 120, like really when we got off the plane and outside, it felt like a joke. Like I never felt that before. Like we literally was laughing.
Wow. Yeah. That's what I remember the most, was like, it was really hot. So
yeah,
I don't know. When he finally did pass away, I mean, what was your initial reaction then? Were you just shocked?
Yeah, I was in shock. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a rumor until I heard back from our road manager who was there with him at the time, who didn't even have, have an idea that Prodigy had passed away, and he was there with Prodigy, not in the hospital room or the hospital, but he was back in his hotel going back and forth checking on Prodigy. And at that point, he hadn't checked on Prodigy when I had called him and heard the rumor. So I told him, I said, hey, what's up with P? Is he good? He was like, oh, yeah, I spoke to him last night. He's getting better. He's in good spirits. He was laughing. He went to the bathroom on his own. He should be out of there in a day or so. All right, cool. You know what? Just go check on him real fast. You know what I mean? Just to put my mind at ease, because I heard something stupid and dumb. He hung up. He called, whatever he did. He was taking too long to call me back. So I called him back, 10 minutes, yo, what's up? And he was crying, grown man just crying like crazy. I was like, I thought he was joking, making a joke, because, I just was with P, I just was with him, and I didn't hear nothing crazy the next 2 days when I went home. He stayed, I was monitoring how he was doing, and that obviously had to be a rumor, a lie.
With his medical condition, what was his relationship with alcohol? Was he, did he stay away from it? Did he encourage you to stay away from it? What was that relationship like?
Yeah, well, Prodigy, he wasn't a big drinker, throughout the years that I knew. I was the one that was like a fish, and I was taking it down. But, P wasn't a big drinker, based on his, his health condition. I didn't see him indulge in a lot of alcohol. I don't even think that he really could in a way that was healthy for him to even consume in that manner. So, he wasn't really a big drinker like that at all.
What about weed, though? How do you guys feel about weed, and how does weed play into your recovery?
I don't smoke weed, I used to smoke weed, back when I was a teenager or whatever, but I stopped that, back when I was a teenager. So, weed never wasn't even really nothing to me. Prodigy smoked weed. When I look at it, everybody smoked weed besides me. that's how I feel. Literally everybody smokes weed, But weed, I look at it as, I guess, it's natural or whatever it is, depending on which way you smoking it, in a pipe or bong, But when you start adding that tobacco leaf with it, you might as well be smoking cigarettes, which I quit too, by the way. Happy.
Hi, congratulations. Thank you. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah, that was like a miracle. If I could quit cigarettes, anybody could quit cigarettes. I mean it literally. But yeah, so we, I never try to judge anybody that smokes weed, but, they try to say it's a gateway drug. I don't think so. I think alcohol is the number one gateway, because you're not really thinking, and that's why they call it, wines and spirits. It's a spirit. Another spirit just jump in you and just be like, hey, try this and try that. Next thing you know, You done did something that you probably wouldn't have did if you were sober.
That is so funny you said that, because I literally just realized you're absolutely right. Alcohol led me pot, and then pot was like, oh, let's do acid. Oh, acid, let's do mushrooms. Oh, after that, let's try coke. Fuck it. It just went on and on and on. I totally agree with you.
yes. I'll tell you, that alcohol, man, that's just like, it opens nasty. The door.
Well, and then, of course, it's so socially acceptable, like we were talking about earlier. Right, it's like, and it's legal, so you can get it anywhere.
You can get it right down the block. What's stopping you? You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, any street corner. You know what's funny is now I live in Colorado, and I quit smoking weed in 2010, and I can literally go get it on any corner, and now I don't smoke. It's kind of funny to me. Right, oh, my God. Right, yeah, right. The things I went through to get a bag of weed.
Now you can just walk right through it.
Yeah. And I'm like, nope.
No, and that to me has always been the thing, is that, I think the thing that always challenges me in my recovery is that I think there's this misnomer that, if it's legal, you can't be addicted to it. Yeah. Right. For me, even though my drug of choice was weed, I was an addict. It wasn't because of the weed. It was because of the feelings that I was not addressing that were behind the wheel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the thinking that goes with it, the thinking that goes around it.
Right. So it was really about like me not dealing with a lot of my, you know, personal issues. And, you know, at this point in my life, you know, and I've shared this now on a couple of podcast episodes, like I'm afraid, legitimately scared of ever smoking weed.
Right.
Because I know it is something that if I ever relapse, I'm done. Like I'm done. And it's not so much my sponsor loves to say this to me. It's not so much that my drug of choice will kill me, but it's my actions that will. Mm-hmm. It won't be that I can, no one has ever died from smoking weed, right? But I'll get into an altercation that might kill me, or I might get behind the wheel of a car and that might kill me, or I might lose my balance on a balcony 75 stories up and that might kill me. Like, you know, it is the behavior around that. Have you gotten to a place, Hav, where you started to take a deeper look at what you're trying to mask and the emotions that you're trying to kind of drink away get more months of recovery and years of recovery?
Yeah, definitely. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm awkward dealing with people, you know what I'm saying, in general. So, but it's just something that I have to master, you know what I mean? We have to deal with people. You know, you can't just try to self-medicate to deal with people. You know what I mean? It is what it is. Some people are better than others at it. And you know what I mean? And that's just what it's going to be. But at the same time, I can't poison myself over it. You know what I mean? Just because I peg myself as not a people person. You know what I mean? I am a people person. You know what I'm saying? It's just that, you know, I got to throw away the fears of, you know what I'm saying, of having to deal with people sometimes one-on-one.
If it makes you feel any better, you're very personable to me and I'm really enjoying this conversation. So I think you're good there. I think you're good there. But I did actually note that down earlier. You did mention that one of your crutches was being antisocial.
Yeah.
So when you're antisocial and when you're alone, you can kind of retreat to your drug of choice and just kind of hide out from the world. Right. And, you know, I've definitely been guilty of that as well. So I can relate to that for sure. How did you get yourself out of that?
Out of being antisocial.
Because you're an artist, so you got to get out there and you got to get on stage and you got to perform and meet people. And how did you get through that?
Man, just because it's just something that I have to do as part of my job description. You know what I mean? It's part, you know, I have to be around people. I have to see people. I have to speak to people. So, you know, I just kind of like, you know, let my mind stop playing tricks on me. It's like, yo, you're going to go, you're going to chill, you're going to talk, and you're going to be done with it, and then you're going to go home, you know, and that's it. Like, you know, it's just my mind just racing and bringing up scenarios that don't even happen yet, you know, so.
It's also that whole acronym FEAR, you know, fake emotions appearing real.
Right.
And a lot of times, you know, those false emotions, I mean, I know personally, for me, I can share, you know, with us, you know, my false emotion appearing real is this sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I get into a place when I'm using where I feel like if I am not the one person that everybody's paying attention to, if I am not the one person that everybody's giving their 100%, you know, blank to, then fuck everybody. Like, fuck all of y'all, because all of y'all, you ain't worth shit to me. Like, you know, and it took a long time for me to identify that narcissistic behavior, that whole idea that, you know, oh, you know, I'm great. What do you think about me being great? You know, like, you know, is this fucking craziness?
Right.
And also, you know, going back to something I read today, you know, we're doing this podcast and today's meditation that I read about was this idea of oops, the idea that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, right? And they talk about in recovery that there are certain things that if you do them over and over again in recovery, you can expect the same result, right? You can't, you know, if you go to 90 meetings in 90 days, if you get a sponsor, if you read the literature, if you stay on top of these things, these are the things that are repeated behavior that you can benefit from, right? That but if you do the opposite, right? If you feel like after 5 years, I can have a little some, like I'm good, right? That's that insanity. That's that whole false emotion appearing real, that there's that self-confidence that starts to rear its ugly head. And for me, I started thinking about, even before I use, if I start to get into a bad behavior, like a narcissism or a disregard, I've gotten to a place now where I go, wait a minute, let me check myself real quick. Because wait, where do I have to read about that defect of character? Where do I have to, what amend do I have to make? Like what step do I have to focus on right now so I can deal with this insanity? Because if I don't deal with it, I'm a fall victim. You know, there's a lot of things that the gods used to say around me, like that I've now incorporated into my own shit, like falling victim, self-awareness, you know, being on my dean. Like I take a lot of that with me into my NA program, into my program, because it is so helpful. What are some of the things that even you took from like Queensbridge or took from the PJs or took from anything that you take now and that might have been a negative or something that was a street something, whatever, and you've taken it into your recovery to make it a positive?
Man, it's hard to say, but you know, if it's anything that I learned from you know, growing up in the hood, is to be strong, you know what I'm saying, throughout it all, no matter what, you know what I mean, kind of to a fault. You know, we never show weakness, you know what I mean, and being an alcoholic is a form of weakness, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's an addiction, but you know, having that pride of not wanting to be weak, it's just, and letting, you know, something possess you, you know, it just, it leads me to want to conquer that vice.
And I feel like also that's something inherently pounded into men's heads. It's like, you're not supposed to cry. You're not supposed to show emotion. That's and I think that's one of the most important things as a human being that we can do. You know, so I just want you to know, Havoc and Surge, it's okay. You can cry on my shoulder. I got your back. Yeah, you know, but it's okay. You know, and like women get pegged as the emotional one, but hey, maybe we're onto something.
Right.
I want to ask you to end with this. If there's one person listening to this right now, that's like, man, wow, Hav is wow, like. Man, I don't know. If there's one thing that could help an addict right now listening that could push him into getting help or push her into getting help, what would you say to that person right now? Why should they try to get into a program?
The reason why I would say for them to try to get into a program, because just imagine how they feel about themselves, right? Underneath it all, people should feel like, yo, they want to be great. So just imagine how much greater you would be without the extra medication. You understand what I'm saying? Because that's just a hindrance. You know what I mean? So if you thought that you was good now, you'll be even greater without the additives. You know what I'm saying? Like whatever that may be. Because those stall you. So there's no better time to start than now. Don't put it off. Time waits for nobody. Life will pass you by if you don't get your act together, and you want to remember shit. So
we're definitely not going to forget you. We're not going to forget Mobb Deep. We're not going to forget your records that you made on 4th and Broadway.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd let you forget that.
Yeah. I almost forgot it, but you reminded me. Yes,
won't let you forget about that Go Unlimited photo shoot we did on the 40 side.
And again,
big shout out to Kareem Stewart, who put this all together, who I understand is your life coach, and he's been giving you.
But you have one too.
Absolutely, man. You gotta have one of those.
Actually, he said something. Kareem said something to me about, he said, yo, I could feel my, he said, Hav will tell you, he said, like, I could feel the chemical changing. I could feel, I feel like my cells changing.
Right.
I feel all of that. Right. So I'm really happy for you, Hav. And, you know, man, from one Cube Euro kid to another Cube Euro kid. I love you, bro. And I'm so,
likewise,
so, man, so, so happy that you're on this road to recovery.
Thank you.
If you are looking for recovery, if you're looking for someone or something to help you, please listen. At the end of the show, we'll be giving you numbers to dial, .coms to check into and to tap into to help you. For the Breaking Anonymity podcast, my name is MC Search.
And I'm Kyle Eustace.
And we will see you next week. Check out new episodes of Breaking Anonymity every Wednesday, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And if you like what you hear, please tell your friends and subscribe. The Breaking Anonymity podcast is a Timeless Podcast Company production. Executive produced by Chantel Barron, Brett Epikmazer, Kyle Eustace, and Michael Barron. Produced by Kyle Eustace and Michael Barron. Sound design by Brett Epikmazer and Nick Davila. Breaking Anonymity logo created by Paul Lukes. Sound effect voiceover by Tembisa Mashaka. If you are battling with addiction or know someone who is, please call the National Addiction Helpline. 1-800-662-4357. That's 1-800-662-4357. You do not have to battle addiction alone.